Chapter 21. Give them space to fall. The pursuer is pursued. If your targets become too used to you as the aggressor, they will give less of their own energy and the tension will slacken. You need to wake them up, turn the tables. Once they are under your spell, take a step back and they will start to come after you. Begin with a touch of aloofness, an unexpected non-appearance, a hint that you're growing bored. Stir the pot by seeming interested in someone else. Make none of this explicit. Let them only sense it, and their imagination will do the rest, creating the doubt you desire. Soon, they will want to possess you physically, and restraint will go out the window. The goal is to have them fall into your arms of their own will. Create the illusion that the seducer is being seduced. Seductive gravity. In the early 1840s, the center of attention in the French art world was a young woman named Apollonie Sabatier. She was so much the natural beauty that sculptors and painters vied to immortalize her in their works. And she was also charming, easy to talk to, and seductively self-sufficient. Men were drawn to her. Her Paris apartment became a gathering spot for writers and artists, and soon Madame Sabatier, as she came to be known, although she was not married, was hosting one of the most important literary salons in France. Writers such as Gustave Flaubert, the elder Alexandre Dumas, and Théophile Gautier were among her regular guests. Near the end of 1852, when she was 30, Madame Sabatier received an anonymous letter. The writer confessed that he loved her deeply. Worried that she would find his sentiments ridiculous, he would not reveal his name, yet he had to let her know that he adored her. Sabatier was used to such attentions. One man after another had fallen in love with her, but this letter was different. In this man, she seemed to have inspired a quasi-religious ardor. The letter, written in a disguised handwriting, contained a poem dedicated to her, titled, "To One Who Is Too Gay." It began by praising her beauty, yet ended with the lines, "And so, one night I'd like to sneak, when darkness tolls the hour of pleasure, a craven thief toward the treasure which is your person, plump and sleek, and most vertiginous delight into those lips so freshly striking, and daily lovelier to my liking, infuse the venom of my spite." Mixed in with her admirer's adoration, clearly, was a strange kind of lust, with a touch of cruelty to it. The poem both intrigued and disturbed her, and she had no idea who had written it. A few weeks later, another letter arrived. As before, the writer enveloped Sabatier in cult-like worship, mixing the physical and the spiritual. And as before, there was a poem, all in one, in which he wrote, "No single beauty is the best, since she is all one flower divine. O mystic metamorphosis, my senses into one sense flow. Her voice makes perfume when she speaks. Her breath is music faint and low." Clearly, the author was haunted by Sabatier's presence and thought of her constantly. But now she began to be haunted by him, thinking of him night and day and wondering who he was. His subsequent letters only deepened the spell. It was flattering to hear that he was enchanted by more than her beauty, yet also flattering to know that he was not immune to her physical charms. One day, an idea occurred to Madame Sabatier as to who the writer might be. A young poet who had frequented her salon for several years, Charles Baudelaire. He seemed shy, in fact, had hardly spoken to her, but she had read some of his poetry, and although the poems in the letters were more polished, the style was similar. At her apartment, Baudelaire would always sit politely in a corner, but now that she thought of it, he would smile at her strangely, nervously. It was the look of a young man in love. Now, when he visited, she watched him carefully, and the more she watched, the surer she was that he was the writer. But she never confirmed her intuition, because she did not want to confront him. He might be shy, and he was a man, and at some point he would have to come to her. And she felt certain that he would. Then, suddenly, the letters stopped coming, and Madame Sabatier could not understand why, since the last one had been even more adoring than all of the others before. Several years went by in which she often thought of her anonymous admirer's letters, but they were never renewed. In 1857, however, Baudelaire published a book of poetry, The Flowers of Evil, and Madame Sabatier recognized several of the verses. They were the ones he had written for her. Now they were out in the open for everyone to see. A little while later, the poet sent her a gift, a specially bound copy of the book and a letter, this time signed with his name. "Yes," he wrote, "he was the anonymous writer. Would she forgive him for being so mysterious in the past? Furthermore, his feelings for her were as strong as ever. Quote, "You didn't think for a moment that I could have forgotten you. You, to me, are more than a cherished image conjured up in a dream. You're my superstition, my constant companion, my secret. Farewell, dear madame. I kiss your hands with profound devotion." Unquote. This letter had a stronger effect on Madame Sabatier than the others had. Perhaps it was his childlike sincerity and the fact that he had finally written to her directly. Perhaps it was that he loved her, but asked nothing of her, unlike all the other men she knew, who at some point had always turned out to want something. Whatever it was, she had an uncontrollable desire to see him. The next day she invited him to her apartment alone. Baudelaire appeared at the appointed hour. He sat nervously in his seat, gazing at her with his large eyes, saying little, and what he did say was formal and polite. He seemed aloof. After he left, a kind of panic seized Madame Sabatier, and the next day she wrote him a first letter of her own. Quote, "Today I'm more calm, and I can feel more clearly the impression of our Tuesday evening together. I can tell you, without the danger of your thinking I'm exaggerating, that I'm the happiest woman on the face of the earth, that I've never felt more truly that I love you, and that I've never seen you look more beautiful, more adorable, my divine friend." Unquote. Madame Sabatier had never before written such a letter. She had always been the one who was pursued. Now she had lost her usual self-possession, and it only got worse. Baudelaire did not answer right away. When she saw him next, he was colder than before. She had the feeling there was someone else, that his old mistress, Jeanne Duval, had suddenly reappeared in his life and was pulling him away from her. One night, she turned aggressive, embracing him, trying to kiss him, but he did not respond and quickly found an excuse to leave. Why was he suddenly inaccessible? She began to flood him with letters, begging him to come to her. Unable to sleep, she would wait all night for him to show up. She had never experienced such desperation. Somehow, she had to seduce him, possess him, have him all to herself. She tried everything, letters, coquetry, all kinds of promises, until he finally wrote that he was no longer in love with her, and that was that. Interpretation. Baudelaire was an intellectual seducer. He wanted to overwhelm Madame Sabatier with words, dominate her thoughts, make her fall in love with him. Physically, he knew he could not compete with her many other admirers. He was shy, awkward, not particularly handsome. So he resorted to his one strength, poetry. Haunting her with anonymous letters gave him a perverse thrill. He had to know she would realize, eventually, that he was her correspondent. No one else wrote like him. But he wanted her to figure this out on her own. He stopped writing to her because he had become interested in someone else, but he knew she would be thinking of him, wondering, perhaps waiting for him. And when he published his book, he decided to write to her again, this time directly, stirring up the old venom he had injected in her. When they were alone, he could see she was waiting for him to do something, to take hold of her, but he was not that kind of seducer. Besides, it gave him pleasure to hold himself back, to sense his power over a woman whom so many desired. By the time she turned physical and aggressive, the seduction was over for him. He had made her fall in love. That was enough. The devastating effect of Baudelaire's push and pull on Madame Sabatier teaches us a great lesson in seduction. First, it is always best to keep at some distance from your targets. You do not have to go as far as remaining anonymous, but you don't want to be seen too often or to be seen as intrusive. If you're always in their face, always the aggressor, they will become used to being passive, and the tension in your seduction will flag. Use letters to make them think about you all the time, to feed their imagination. Cultivate mystery. Stop them from figuring you out. Baudelaire's letters were delightfully ambiguous, mixing the physical and the spiritual, teasing Sabatier with their multiplicity of possible interpretations. Then, at the point when they are ripe with desire and interest, when perhaps they are expecting you to make a move, as Madame Sabatier expected that day in her apartment, take a step back. You are unexpectedly distant, friendly, but no more than that. Certainly not sexual. Let this sink in for a day or two. Your withdrawal will trigger anxiety. The only way to relieve this anxiety is to pursue and possess you. Step back now, and you make your targets fall into your arms like ripe fruit, blind to the force of gravity that is drawing them to you. The more they participate, the more their willpower is engaged, the deeper the erotic effect. You have challenged them to use their own seductive powers on you, and when they respond, the tables will turn and they will pursue you with desperate energy. Keys to seduction. Since humans are naturally obstinate and willful creatures and prone to suspicions of people's motives, it is only natural in the course of any seduction that in some ways your target will resist you. Seductions, then, are rarely easy or without setbacks. But once your victims overcome some of their doubts and begin to fall under your spell, they will reach a point where they start to let go. They may sense that you are leading them along, but they are enjoying it. No one likes things to be complicated and difficult, and your target will expect the conclusion to come quickly. That is the point, however, where you must train yourself to hold back. Deliver the pleasurable climax they're so greedily awaiting, succumb to the natural tendency to bring the seduction to a rapid end, and you will have missed an opportunity to ratchet up the tension, to make the affair more heated. After all, you don't want a passive little victim to toy with. You want the seduced to engage their will in all its force, to become active participants in the seduction. You want them to pursue you, hopelessly ensnaring themselves in your web in the process. The only way to accomplish this is to take a step back and make them anxious. You have strategically retreated before, see chapter 12, but this is different. The target is falling for you now, and your retreat will lead to panicky thoughts. You're losing interest. It's somehow my fault. Perhaps it's something I've done. Rather than think you're rejecting them on your own, your targets will want to make this interpretation, since if the cause of the problem is something they've done, they have the power to win you back by changing their behavior. If you are simply rejecting them, on the other hand, they have no control. People always want to preserve hope. Now they will come to you, turn aggressive, thinking that will do the trick. They will raise the erotic temperature. Understand, A person's willpower is directly linked to their libido, their erotic desire. When your victims are passively waiting for you, their erotic level is low. When they turn pursuer, getting involved in the process, brimming with tension and anxiety, the temperature is raised. So raise it as high as you can. When you withdraw, make it subtle. You are instilling unease. Your coldness or distance should dawn on your targets when they're alone, in the form of a poisonous doubt creeping into their mind. Their paranoia will become self-generating. Your subtle step back will make them want to possess you, so they will willingly advance into your arms without being pushed. This is different from the strategy in Chapter 20, in which you're inflicting deep wounds, creating a pattern of pain and pleasure. There, the goal is to make your victims weak and dependent. Here, it is to make them active and aggressive. Which strategy you prefer to use, the two cannot be combined, depends on what you want and the proclivities of your victim. In Soren Kierkegaard's The Seducer's Diary, Johannes aims to seduce the young and beautiful Cordelia. He begins by being rather intellectual with her and slowly intriguing her. Then he sends her letters that are romantic and seductive. Now her fascination blossoms into love. Although in person he remains a little distant, she senses in him great depths and is certain that he loves her. Then one day, while they're talking, Cordelia has a strange sensation. Something about him is different. He seems more interested in ideas than in her. Over the next few days, this doubt gets stronger, the letters are a little less romantic, something is missing. Feeling anxious, she slowly turns aggressive, becomes the pursuer instead of the pursued. The seduction is now much more exciting, at least for Johannes. Johannes's step back is subtle. He merely gives Cordelia the impression that his interest is a little less romantic than the day before. He returns to being the intellectual. This stirs the worrisome thought that her natural charms and beauty no longer have as much effect on him. She must try harder, provoke him sexually, prove to herself that she has some power over him. She is now brimming with erotic desire, brought to that point by Johannes's subtle withdrawal of affection. Each gender has its own seductive lures, which come naturally to them. When you seem interested in someone but don't respond sexually, it is disturbing and presents a challenge. They will find a way to seduce you. To produce this effect, first reveal an interest in your targets through letters or subtle insinuation. But when you're in their presence, assume a kind of sexless neutrality. Be friendly, even warm, but no more. You are pushing them into arming themselves with the seductive charms that are natural to their sex. Exactly what you want. In the latter stages of the seduction, let your targets feel that you are becoming interested in another person. This is another form of taking a step back. When Napoleon Bonaparte first met the young widow, Josephine de Beauharnais, in 1795, he was excited by her exotic beauty and the looks she gave him. He began to attend her weekly soirees, and to his delight, she would ignore the other men and remain at his side, listening to him so attentively. He found himself falling in love with Josephine and had every reason to believe she felt the same. Then, at one soiree, she was friendly and attentive as usual, except that she was equally friendly to another man there, a former aristocrat, like Josephine, the kind of man that Napoleon could never compete with when it came to manners and wit. Doubts and jealousies began to stir within. As a military man, he knew the value of going on the offensive, and after a few weeks of a swift and aggressive campaign, he had her all to himself, eventually marrying her. Of course, Josephine, a clever seductress, had set it all up. She didn't say she was interested in another man, but his mere presence at her house, a look here and there, subtle gestures, made it seem that way. There is no more powerful way to hint that you are losing your desire. Make your interest in another too obvious, though, and it could backfire. This is not the situation in which you want to seem cruel. Doubt and anxiety are the effects you're after. Make your possible interest in another barely perceptible to the naked eye. Once someone has fallen for you, any physical absence will create unease. You are literally creating space. The Russian seductress Lou Andrea Salome had an intense presence. When a man was with her, he felt her eyes boring into him and often became entranced with her coquettish ways and spirit. But then, almost invariably, something would come up. She would have to leave town for a while, or would be too busy to see him. It was during her absences that men fell hopelessly in love with her and vowed to be more aggressive next time they were with her. Your absences at this latter point of the seduction should seem at least somewhat justified. You are insinuating not a blatant brush-off, but a slight doubt. Perhaps you could have found some reason to stay. Perhaps you're losing interest. Perhaps there is someone else. In your absence, their appreciation of you will grow. They will forget your faults, forgive your sins. The moment you return, they will chase after you as you desire. It will be as if you had come back from the dead. According to the psychologist Theodor Reich, we learn to love only through rejection. As infants, we are showered with love by our mother. We know nothing else. But when we get a little older, we begin to sense that her love is not unconditional. If we don't behave, if we do not please her, she can withdraw it. The idea that she'll withdraw her affection fills us with anxiety and, at first, with anger. We will show her. We will throw a tantrum. But that never works. And we slowly realize that the only way to keep her from rejecting us again is to imitate her, to be as loving, kind, and affectionate as she is. This will bond her to us in the deepest way. The pattern is ingrained in us for the rest of our lives. By experiencing a rejection or a coldness, we learn to court and pursue, to love. Recreate this primal pattern in your seduction. First, shower your targets with affection. They will not be sure where this is coming from, but it is a delightful feeling and they will never want to lose it. When it does go away, in your strategic step back, they'll have moments of anxiety and anger, perhaps throwing a tantrum, and then the same childlike reaction. The only way to win you back, to have you for sure, will be to reverse the pattern, to imitate you, to be the affectionate giving one. It's the terror of rejection that turns the tables. This pattern will often repeat itself naturally in an affair or relationship. One person goes cold, the other pursues, then goes cold in turn, making the first person the pursuer, and on and on. As a seducer, don't leave this to chance. Make it happen. You are teaching the other person to become a seducer, just as the mother in her own way taught the child to return her love by turning her back. For your own sake, learn to relish this reversal of roles. Don't merely play at being the pursued, but enjoy it. Give in to it. The pleasure of being pursued by your victim can often surpass the thrill of the hunt. Reversal. There are moments when creating space and absence will blow up in your face. An absence at a critical moment in the seduction can make the target lose interest in you. It also leaves too much to chance. While you're away, they could find another person who will distract their thoughts from you. Cleopatra easily seduced Mark Antony, but after their first encounters, he returned to Rome. Cleopatra was mysterious and alluring, but if she let too much time pass, he would forget her charms. So she let go of her usual coquetry and came after him when he was on one of his military campaigns. She knew that once he saw her, he would fall under her spell again and pursue her. Use absence only when you're sure of the target's affection, and never let it go on too long. It's most effective later in the seduction. Also, never create too much space. Don't write too rarely. Don't act too cold. Don't show too much interest in someone else. That is the strategy of mixing pleasure with pain, detailed in Chapter 20, and will create a dependent victim, or will even make him or her give up completely. Some people, too, are inveterately passive. They're waiting for you to make the bold move, and if you don't, they'll think you're weak. The pleasure to be had from such a victim is less than the pleasure you'll get from someone more active. But if you're involved with such a type, do what you need to if you are to have your way. Then end the affair and move on.